Welcome to Vermont Favorites on WBTV LP Burlington 99.3 FM. I'm Adam Rabin. Each week I talk with musicians, artists, performers, and creators about their unique journeys and what they love about living in Vermont. My guest today is a cartoonist and illustrator who has done work for politicians, comedy clubs, and breweries. This native Burlingtonian has traveled the world exploring the many unique art scenes, and you can hear him discuss these experiences and the local scene on the Art Mache podcast. Please welcome Vermont favorite, Patrick Bruno Tracy.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for coming in on a Sunday morning. Bruno, where does that come from?
So it basically is a high school nickname.
Yeah.
That I was on a lacrosse team. There were two Patricks. And so in my German class I took, my nickname was Bruno. And then during my art classes, they asked me what a good nickname would be, Bruno, and it kind of just stuck. Yeah.
So basically just to differentiate you from other Patricks.
There are a lot of Patricks who played lacrosse in high school. So yeah, it was a very popular name.
That's a thing, right? Okay, all right. So this is at Burlington High School, I presume.
Yeah.
So
Strong and mighty seahorse.
Awesome. So you're from Burlington. You grew up here, born
and raised.
Right on.
Yeah. Right on. In the cusp of the old New North End.
Okay, so you're up near, partway up North Avenue.
Yeah, like right at the start, kind of closer to the police department.
Gotcha.
Like right before it kind of turns and...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right on. So you're a cartoonist, an illustrator. Mm-hmm. What kind of things were you taking in as a kid that made you want to, you know, what were your inspirations? What were your motivators early on that said, oh, I want to draw?
I would say probably the easiest answer would be my boredom in math class.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I just did not enjoy math that much. I was a pretty bad student. Because I spent all my time just drawing in my textbooks to my teacher's chagrin and just kind of spending all my free time just doodling. I did comic books. I don't know if you're familiar with the Magic, it's a card game.
Yeah.
And illustrative works there were just like amazing. I'd buy the cards, not so much to play, but just to like gawk at and look. And I kind of drew my inspiration from there at a young age.
Fascinating. Yeah, because those were some pretty wild.
They're so beautiful.
But I remember the drawings were very intricate.
They are.
Yeah, very involved.
Yeah. And oddly enough, the game mechanics are very similar to math because it is math. So in a weird way, I was kind of betraying myself.
Interesting. Right, because you're like counting up the points and a lot of addition and subtraction.
It's a lot of kind of algebra too. Like if this case is this case and this number means this number and then it equals out to this.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So I didn't know it. They got me in the end, those math teachers.
You can't escape math. You really can't.
And unfortunately, now I can balance my checkbook.
Hey, that's all an artist, you know, can hope for is the ability to balance a checkbook. Wow. So you're studying at Burlington High School and you're drawing inspiration from Magic the Gathering, right?
Yeah.
What else? What other kind of artwork was influential to you?
I would say a lot of woodblock prints. From a young age, I really liked Hokusai and Hiroshige and those Japanese woodblock print artists.
Oh, interesting.
Of the Edo period in Japan, which was a period where art kind of left the commissioned world and woodblock printing, like the press for literature, kind of brought art to the masses.
Right.
And you could see the individual lines and layers and colors, and you can kind of deconstruct a piece as you look at it. And that I kind of found very interesting because I found it hard for me to see a finished like acrylic painting or watercolor painting and see how they got there from a blank canvas because all the colors are beautifully blended in together. It's far more intricate. But with a woodblock print, you can be like, wow, not only is that beautiful, but like I can count the layers and see and assume how they did it. And you can just kind of reverse engineer it in a way that's a little more friendly to an artist kind of coming into more elaborate artwork than just doodling in your textbooks.
It is kind of a folk art. When you mentioned woodblock, I'm thinking about some of the calendars and artwork that who are the folks out in the Northeast Kingdom? The with the big puppet heads.
Oh my gosh. Jeez, Collective Brain Fart.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not their name. That would be a horrible name.
Collective Brain
Fart. We are the Collective Brain Fart. That might be good. Who knows? It could be.
Yeah. Well, you know.
For anyone to use, go for it.
The I can't believe I can't think of the name.
Puppet
of
the, nah.
The
Yeah. We're going to remember it like at the end.
Yes. I'm sure we will. And everyone listening is like, duh, it's
God,
blank.
Come on.
Yeah.
You guys.
But they do, and I've seen that a lot, especially in Vermont. It's kind of a, it's popular. No, I shouldn't say popular, but it was, you learned it from Japanese work, but also, I mean, it's kind of worldwide, that kind of folky approach to art using tools that are accessible to the masses.
Exactly, because there's it's art is received differently when it's say if historically you know a church asks somebody to make a fresco on the wall.
Yeah,
that's
not something that anyone can just.
I'm just gonna go inside the church into the parts of the church that only the priest can go into and just look at some art.
Yeah,
And they didn't sound like that at all in Europe at the time. But yeah, there's I've always been drawn to the idea of kind of art being part of the community, and because that's what it really, who it really belongs to, because it comes from something personal.
Yeah,
it means to be. It's a means to express yourself, and the more people you can get that to, I feel the more successful I feel as an artist, and is really kind of the goal.
Yeah, and that's something that you discuss in your podcast is, you know, what are the people. You know, not the way ups, not the elite are doing, but what are folks doing? Mm-hmm. You study, but I got to backtrack a little bit because
we have a sound machine here that we're just pressing buttons.
we have a really big tape machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's huge, man. It's huge. Yeah. It fills this whole room.
It really does. We're just barely squeezing into this closet.
Jeez.
You studied in Japan for a year. You talk about the woodblock prints. What brought you over to Japan?
Well, I'd say probably a big part of it not only was the first influence of seeing those woodblock prints, but also, I mean, Burlington is a beautiful place, but anywhere I feel anyone kind of grows up in and lives in, and this is their world. My worldview didn't really extend much outside the greater Burlington area. And so I had this huge desire to just travel somewhere. And if I'm going to travel somewhere, I'm going to travel as far as I can go.
Yeah.
And so there was that appeal of a different land with a completely different culture and different worldview and huge history and beautiful artwork. And so I just kind of, through starting really in college when I took Japanese as a whim, just kind of gravitated towards it and then just applied for a study abroad for, I was actually there for a total of 7 months. And I just went, you know, I was lucky enough to get the opportunity, and it really just opened my eyes and many ways, not only artwork, but just as how the world works as a cohesive piece and not just little individual factions of countries.
Yeah.
The world is so small nowadays.
You saw a lot of common, as well as being exotic and very different, you probably saw some common threads over there.
Oh, yeah. It's especially in a country that is so far different than your own, it's a lot more evident, the similarities, because it's easy. It's a stark contrast what's different. And so you can easily attach to, oh my gosh, that's the same, even though I'm half a world away. I remember there was this cafe I used to go to in Shibuya, which is a district in Tokyo, which is lots of districts. So that's one tiny little district. But I saw this artwork up, this art that wrapped around the whole room, entire wall of all these individual drawings. And through my limited Japanese, I could read on the pamphlet, this guy drew 365 drawings once a day, and he kept adding it to this mural for an entire year. And then he printed it all out and pasted it all, this whole room, this whole art gallery was taken up by it. And in my broken Japanese, I was able to have a discussion with him about Photoshop and like Illustrator and like his ideas behind like why he did it. And I mean, I'm sure I sound like a caveman. I'm like, you make painting on wall.
Yeah.
Painting good. How make painting good? But like that discussion really kind of set my mind onto this path of art as a language outside the verbal definition of the word language. How one thing I can find interesting for my own tastes, I don't know where it comes from. I just know it's interesting. Or I can see something, image of someone that looks sad or a happy scene, and I can feel happy and I can feel sad, and that emotion can be conveyed to me. Mm. But that artist could be over in India or in South Africa or anywhere, and I wouldn't know. But regardless, what their intention is crosses verbal boundaries and just through artwork exists in a different language. And that I just found, and still do, incredibly fascinating. I'm still kind of trying to chase that as well. But yeah, I'm sorry. What was that? That kind of went on a tangent there.
No, that is the question. The the commonalities that you're finding half a world away are just as surprising, though probably shouldn't be just as surprising as the differences. And what you see, yeah, like you say, happy and sad. I mean, the human experience doesn't really have boundaries, doesn't have borders. So that is fascinating. Yeah. What else have you, where else have you gone around the world? I think I saw something online. You went to Germany, is that right?
Yeah. I had a old college friend who we went to college with in Tokyo. I visited him in a small little town called Eschborn. There's an umlaut on the O. So gotcha. Umlaut's a little two little dots. Regardless, I'm butchering the how to say it. And then I went to Cologne, Germany, and a lot of beautiful architecture and a lot of rich history. I was only there for, I think, about 2 weeks or so. But again, when you're in a different country and you see this artistic vocabulary that has existed before, you know, America even existed.
Right.
Still standing, it just kind of really puts you in your place. Kind of makes you feel very grounded as an artist to see that people have been doing this and have had their own success and created their own world in the sense of artwork beyond your own fathoming of your own existence as an artist.
Yeah.
Which is really, really just mind opening.
Especially having lived in the same relatively small town your whole life, to see it, just how big the world is.
Yeah.
Big and small at the same time, but how there are so many different ways to say the same things that people have been saying for thousands of years, and the same things that people are trying to figure out and learn
exactly
for so long.
It's so much different than seeing a picture of a piece of art or a place in a textbook and physically being there. It's just so much more different, and it's just, I hate to keep using the term mind-blowing, but mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was just
I have a bingo card, and all the spaces say mind-blowing, so I'm just I'm trying to...
Well, you'll win bingo pretty quickly that
perfect,
way.
Perfect, great.
I spent a week and a half over in England and Wales a few months back.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things, I mean, my wife and I saw some amazing structures. It was more about visiting castles. I didn't see any, like, galleries or museums, but we did see some amazing old castles and buildings and even like whole towns that were built 1,000 years ago. And it's like, yeah, people have lived in homes, in row homes, in what we would call condos or townhouses. They just called, you know, building.
Yeah. There's no plural.
Yeah.
No, we're just
we
building,
live in building.
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 Water. Big water.
Castle.
Castle. Castle building water. That's all you need.
Yeah. And then again, it's like you see it on TV. And you're like, yeah, it's a castle. It's a big building that some rich dudes lived in.
Yeah.
But then you go there and you're touching this stone that's part of this like 30-foot high wall. And yeah, the floors have fallen out because, you know, the walls are stone, but the floors and the levels of floors are wood, right? So those rot away after, you know, 100 years. And I'm holding my hand up against these stones, you know, 5 feet up because, you know, it's as tall as I can reach. And I'm seeing the things go way up. And I was like, someone laid this stone here 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And put the mortar around it and set it in place. And it has been here for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
You know, 4 times as long as this country has been a country.
Right.
Yeah. And twice as long as since, you know, white people discovered it.
Makes you feel like a little ant, you know?
Totally.
In a
like
very
a little
good
ant.
Way.
And yes. Yeah. There's that freedom of, there's that, you know, mind-blowing, there it is, of one yeah, more, one more.
That's be natural. Though.
Yeah, if you go across, are you going across the middle? Because then you can get the bonus square in the middle.
Well, right now I'm going for the full card.
Okay,
I'm just going the full card. Isn't that like an ultra? Is that a thing where it's like if you get the full card, I don't know, you win a car or something? I don't
get a puppy at least. So there was totally lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
You're touching the stone, makes touching you feel small the stone, in a very, very,
very
way.
Small. So there's like this relief of responsibility.
That's like, very true.
I am not responsible for forwarding the artistic voice of my generation or of the world or of the human experience. It is not my responsibility. And when you're sitting in a studio, you know, whether music studio, art studio, or wherever, you think you need to make this piece because you have something huge to say.
Yes.
But now you touch a stone that's 1,000 years old. You look at a piece of art that's 1,000 years old. It's like, yeah, I'm off the hook.
Yeah. That is the best way to phrase it.
Yeah.
It's you're just like, what I say isn't necessarily like, it's not earth shattering.
Yeah.
It's just me. And it kind of frees you up to be like, whatever I do, no matter how successful I am in this art form, it's going to be a drop in the bucket.
It is a drop.
And that's okay. And that frees you up from all this kind of, all these things you built up in your brain about what you have to do with artwork. And because that can be dangerous when
really
there's like
is.
The level of have to and want to when it comes to artwork.
Yes.
You know, if you're going to make it a business, you have to pay the bills, but that's understandable. But that's it.
That's
everything
it.
Else should be want to. Yeah. Have the freedom to feel like you can fail. Have the freedom to try new things because you know what? You're doing it for you. If you don't do it for you, then why are you doing it?
Yeah, what's the point? I mean, we all, you know, everyone in my band, all the people I know, all the performers I know, we got day jobs, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, 99% of the people I know in the arts have other jobs, right? Yeah. To support what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're not, if you're going to do this kind of thing, you got to be enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the artistic urge that, you know, why do I, you know, for me, I, you know, I write music, you know, why do I write? Because I have to write music.
Yeah.
You know, I can't not make music. So there's that part of me feeling like this compulsion, right? This obsession, compulsion to create. Mm-hmm. And I have to balance that with the drop in the bucket philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Which I find very, as you said it before, it frees yourself from this sense of responsibility. I'd say until I came back from my travels, I very much felt that way, that I was responsible to someone or something, this unknown thing in regards to whenever I put a pencil to paper, I'm like, every stroke I make has to be perfect or it has to have some grand purpose to it. And it's like, dude, just that dude has a cool beard. Draw that beard. That's a cool looking beard. Let's see what that would look like in shapes. Like, that's it. You know, just do it for fun. Yeah. Which, it's so in that way, any chance I get to feel kind of smaller is or in a grounded way, I seek out like no tomorrow. It's just, I don't know if you feel that way, but it just readjusts yourself and it kind of just gets all the crud out of your brain, all the worry. And you're just like, you know what? In the grand scheme of things, it may not matter, but that's the point. It doesn't need to.
It doesn't need to matter. And yet it does, even if you're not trying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I listened back to, and I'm sure you've looked at artwork that you did years ago. and I've looked at songs that I've, you know, written and recorded years ago. And it's like, objectively, this is not good.
No. Why is that eye floating like 5 inches above the other eye?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, it wouldn't kill you, Adam, to hit the note that you wrote, right?
Right. Maybe. I don't know.
But I listened to it and the purpose of that recording or of that song, even if it's just a composition, is like this is one moment in time that was captured.
Yeah.
And is life not just a series of moments in time? And to be able to relate that small scale to say that is what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the big picture is the collection of small pictures, if I can get really far out.
No, that makes sense. I was going to ask if, do you like tend to like obsess over like a certain piece and like really try to get it right?
Or
Oh
yeah.
And then after you do it, how do you feel when like,
I feel
you got
the
it
same way
like,
as I do when I finish a song that I wrote in an afternoon?
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Isn't it weird? You're just kind of like, oh, huh.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy with it, but like, wow, it's the same
I've written stuff and like just challenge myself to write and record a song in an afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And I listened back to that a year later. I'm like, that was pretty good. And I listened to a song that I slaved over for a year and was meticulous about. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, they're both pretty good.
Yeah, they're both pretty good. Both I'm happy with them.
I'm happy with both of those. Yeah, it's just amazing how when you're in your creative process, you can kind of just obsess about a lot, mm-hmm. like each individual note or each individual stroke. But yeah, I think the way you put it is very accurate. It is, I think you should look at your artwork as a collection of moments because it's the most similar to like a mirror image of like the human, just how life works.
Yeah,
the human existence. It's a series of moments. Some are good, some are bad, but the collective is what you always look at. And art should be treated the exact same way versus like doing one piece of artwork and really spending all your time on it and like years and years and years and years and years, and you'll never be done if you obsess to a certain extent.
Right.
And then you kind of lose sight of why you even did it in the first place. I used to be that way all the time and it would drive me insane.
Yeah.
You know? So that's a very good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to like your journey, so you went to Germany, you've been to Japan. Mm-hmm. What other interesting things have you seen and done along the way?
In regards to artwork or just interesting?
Artwork, where have you been?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'd say probably Japan and Germany are the two big places. I could say Canada, but like living in Vermont, it's almost like to anywhere else in the country, like Canada counts as a foreign country, but in Vermont, we're kind of like, eh.
Yeah, it's Canada.
Yeah, we have people from Quebec all the time. It's just like North Vermont. I mean, sure they speak French, but whatever. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah.
When all the Montrealers come down, you know, on holiday weekends to take advantage of the, you know, the tax-free clothing and the cutout sales, I think, wow, we're like the southern resort. We're like
pretty. We're their Florida.
They're
very, very cold Florida.
Having lived in Florida for 11 years, I can say, yeah, it's.
Well, they get snow down there now, right?
Yeah. Well, soon enough. So speaking of Vermont, you did some work, if I read correctly, for Senator Leahy.
Yeah, I did.
Another Patrick, by the way.
Another Patrick. He didn't make me call myself Bruno, which is very nice.
And you didn't call him Bruno.
I didn't know. I called him Senator Leahy.
Good man.
This is the way you talk to him.
Yep.
Yeah, I did. I do graphic design and illustration. Graphic design is what I do as a profession. It's my day job.
Yeah.
And I also do it on the side just for fun. And I happened to do a float for him last year during the re-election process for a lot of Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty cool. I'm always amazed. There's when you work with different clients, I do a lot of small businesses because I like being able to help people who maybe can't afford like the huge design companies in town.
Right.
It's kind of like a different option for them.
Or can't have a full time on staff.
Exactly. Yeah. They just need like their logo or just something to kind of just, they have it once and then they can go off to the races.
Yeah.
And his team was like, his design team was insane. They sit down with me and usually it's something small, like, you know, a logo or like a pamphlet. And they're like, okay, we want to do this huge float.
Yeah.
That sounded very Bernie Sanders.
I don't know why, wrong senator.
Yeah. I'm going to stop my impressions. Someone's going to be like, God, that's really not on point. but if Senator Sanders is listening, I apologize.
Yeah.
But
he is, by the way.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Well, there goes one view. But now they're just like, we want to do a float that's, you know, like 6 feet tall and we're just going to make four sides of it. And can you get it done within a week? And I'm like,
what?
Yeah. I'm going to say it more confidently, but I'm just like, yeah. And they just did it. It was amazing. It was just, they just got a lot of gumption.
It's great to see a politician who can get something done.
I really put that ball on the tee for you.
Yeah. You really did. So what? Tell me about it. Cause I couldn't find any pictures of, I didn't know what it was that you created. Was it just like a re-elect Leahy kind of logo?
So it was more like a general what the Democratic Party stood for. It was like Senator Leahy, for those who know him or love Batman and Senator Leahy know the ties there. He kind of grew up learning how to read with Batman comics. And so he wanted they thought it would be a good idea if they did a float that was like a boom, bam, pow comic book like sound effect thing. It was really cool. Had a really cool kind of hat. There's a back wall to the float that was maybe like 5-6 feet high, and then it had two runners on the side and then a front piece that were probably that were much longer than they were tall. And it just had a nice, cool kind of color halftone to it, and all their what they stood for in Boom Bam Pow letters. And yeah, it was great. And then it had like a T-shirt to go with it. It was a really kind of fun. They had a really lot of really cool ideas just right at the first meeting. And
that's
it's really
great.
Cool to like sit down with somebody and like, okay. And then it's just like a playground to them. And they're just like, we want this and this and this and this and this. And you're like, it's infectious.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, that was a really cool experience because they're just like, okay, we want a T-shirt and we want to build a float and we want to do this and that. And it was, I never made a huge float before.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a different,
but
it's a very different, it's fun working in new mediums that you don't get to do all that often.
And also different scales. And it's anything that makes you a little bit uncomfortable is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're ever comfortable, danger zone.
Yeah. You can hang out there for an hour or so, but then you're going to get, you can very easily get lost.
Don't make a habit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I, for my day job, I do a little bit of graphic design. I mean, I'm mostly web stuff, but
what's your favorite program?
For web, I use Dreamweaver.
Yeah.
I'm an Adobe Suite
guy.
Yeah.
There we go. that's a separate bingo card.
Yeah. Didn't think I'd have too much trouble getting a attaboy from you on that.
Yeah, no.
And so I got to design, I was told I'm going to be designing a car wrap, right? You know, designing, we bought a new car and we want to put, not really a wrap, it wasn't like a full single piece, but it was like designing the what would you even call it?
Like
the decals.
Side part?
Yeah, the sides.
You're designing a van.
One was a car and then one was two different cars and then a binder. And it's just like, I'm designing a three ring binder cover and a car and it's just
same
like
project.
Yeah. Well, it's the same company. And I'm like, okay. It's like, you get that moment of like, holy crap. How do I do this? And then you're like, okay, I know the basics. I just have to find out the rules of this specific medium. Right. So I talked to the person in charge. I was like, can you give me a template? What am I looking for? Is it RGB? Is it CMYK? You know, is it strictly, you know, you have four Pantone colors to choose from? You know, what are my parameters? What are my boundaries? But yeah, and then you just draw and you just have to trust that, you know, I've been doing this for long enough. It'll come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the best question to ask, like when you're talking, if anyone who's like looking into doing freelance work, ask what the boundaries are, because that's the one question that will answer almost any other question you have down the road. If you just know, okay, cool, I want to do this, what can't I do, or how do you want it done? Took me a while to learn that one, but you know, when you do, you're just like, why didn't I ask that? Jeez.
Yeah, everything has been done.
Yeah,
You know,
you're
a million
not reinventing
times.
The wheel.
Right.
Yeah,
literally.
Unless the job is to reinvent the wheel, in which case, find a different job because you can't.
Yep. I didn't go to school for engineering, so I couldn't
for wheel engineering.
Yeah, wheel engineering.
I don't think anyone does. It's a dead art.
It is. There's not too much of a call for that.
No.
But if there were, believe me, I know some people who would be greatly qualified.
Now I'm thinking of different ways to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah,
like they're all instantly.
It's like one hand clapping, you know, it's like a cone. It's like a meditation cue.
Is it a cone? Yeah.
K-O-A-N. Yeah. Where you just like, think on this for a minute. It's like, how would you reinvent the wheel? And then, you know, 3 days later, you come out of the room. You're like, I have achieved enlightenment. you
start,
figured out how to reinvent
and then
the wheel.
You start floating. there's a glow to you. What's going on with Frank?
And then they ask you, so how are you going to reinvent the wheel? I'm going to keep it exactly the same.
Aww.
But I'm going to be okay with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to find equanimity in the design of the wheel.
Boom.
Boom. Mind's blown.
There's Nirvana.
Oh, there we go.
Where's my puppy?
Okay, you win a puppy.
There's not a lot of space here. I don't see where you could hide the puppy with the big videotape thing you have.
No, it's in the back room.
Okay, good. There's a bunch of toys and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The dog's in the soundproof booth. So
barking.
He's just barking. You can't hear it on the show, but he's back there.
Yeah.
He's back there. So speaking of goofing off, you I am nothing if not the master of the segue. Yeah. In fact, here's my favorite segue. You're listening to 99.3 WBTV online at 99.3wbtv.org. We're talking with, why do I always say we? I'm talking with Patrick Bruno Tracy on Vermont Favorites, and we're talking about the different graphic artist and illustration work that you've done here around town. And one of the things that you got involved with is the Vermont Comedy Club.
Yep.
And we've also performed with a an improv troupe,
yes.
Which I messed around. I've dabbled in the improv scene over there a little bit. But tell me how you got involved in that, both graphic design-wise and then the actual performing you've done. Because that's you talk about putting yourself in an uncomfortable strange environment. I can't think of anything stranger or more uncomfortable than improv comedy.
Yeah, so those kind of actually started at the same time. I was at UVM, and I was working for the program board, which is all the any kind of show that comes in for the students that needs advertising. They hire students to do the work,
right?
And so Nathan Hartswick, who is co-founder along with Natalie Miller of the Vermont Comedy Club, at the time had a show going on, and I did a poster for him, and I never met the guy. I did the poster, they hung up, the event happened, and then a couple days later, my boss called me and was like, oh, hey, the owner, one of the owners of Vermont Comedy Club wanted to hunt you down and talk to you, and I'm like, oh, okay, and he was just like, hey, I really liked your poster. That was totally quirky, totally cool. Do you want to do more? Also, do you want to do stand-up? And I was just like, yes and yes.
How did Nathan, why was he thinking stand-up?
Because, well, at the time I was a college kid, and he was like, all right, we have paid stuff down the road, but they were, right now they're like brick and mortar.
Yeah.
But back then, probably, 6 years ago, seven years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I've known them for a while. They were still working out of their apartment, you know, and really kind of busting butt to get the comedy scene, which they pretty much are the comedy scene, to where it is now from then. So like, we have paid gigs down the line, but right now, how would you be interested if we paid you and like you take a free stand-up class and then you have a performance? And I'm just like, you know what? That fits perfectly. That is great. I've always kind of, I'm a very introverted guy.
I can tell.
Yeah. I can turn it on, turn off if I need to. But like my ideal night is like home watching Netflix drawing. Like that's it. But I was like, you know what? I need this. This would be good. I consider myself a funny guy. And so I thought, why not? So I was doing graphic design for them. And then I did stand-up class, and that went really well. And then just bled into improv. And
yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a different creative medium. You know, it's a different muscle.
Yes.
I say if for me, drawing is like using my arms.
Mm-hmm.
It's like suddenly I wake up one morning and I'm like, oh my God, I have leg muscles. And like, that's improv. It's all part of the same body, but it's a different muscle that you didn't necessarily focus on or were aware of. And you're like, this all works together as like the art body. I don't know if that makes
sense. There you go.
I have a diagram somewhere, I'm sure. But yeah.
How did getting involved in that stand-up and improv, do you think, feed back into your arm workouts?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, your art workouts.
It made me improv in particular and stand up. There's always that fear when you get on stage of the part of the thrill of it is they could not laugh. You could walk on stage and deliver this line that you feel has like the bite to it and will just knock their socks off and then crickets.
Yeah.
You know, there's that fear and it happens, you know. And so you just have to be okay with failing.
Yeah.
You have to be okay with being like, okay, that didn't work. Next thing.
Or be okay with not coming up with anything.
Right? And just, especially with improv.
Yes.
You can like rely on people collaboratively. But I'd say as far as stand-up goes, it was don't really care overly much. That is a horribly structured sentence from a grammatical standpoint. my mom's like, oh my God. And she doesn't sound like that either.
Yeah.
But it taught me to, if a drawing doesn't work out, just go on to the next drawing.
Yeah.
And just keep doing it. And then improv was more collaboration.
Yeah.
It was more, you have something to bring to the table, but someone else does too. And when you bring them together, it's a completely different, bigger piece than just yourself.
Yeah, because drawing is a very, you know, the illustration and the graphic design is a very solitude, you know, very solitary practice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just you, and really you don't want anyone, you know, for a little while you're, you talk about it, you know, maybe you talk about it with a client or somebody, you know, beforehand, but then you're like, okay, now I'm going to go off into my hole and work on this for a little bit.
Very accurate.
Yes. So making that leap to, okay, now not only are you going to be part of a group, mm-hmm. but the creation, the collaborative process is the performance, is the work.
Yeah.
And that's the scariness, but it's also... it's very different. Like you said, same body, but it's a very different muscle in the same body. Had you ever done anything that collaborative or team based before?
So when I was back in Burlington High School, there's this program called Design and Illustration, which is pretty much our college level course teaching about just artwork in a very commercially applicable way.
Yeah.
Giving you kind of graphic design chops and things you can kind of carry on into a career. But at the same time, you're in a room with like 13 other people and you're always working together. So that kind of was the start of it. And then that seed laid dormant until improv, which kind of kicked it up. And now I'm doing this podcast with my friend of mine, Steven Chowinski. He's an amazing musician and he knows a lot about audio and I know nothing. So
it's good to have him on the team. It's
great creatively and also in a utilitarian purpose.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the muscle I'm working now with the collaboration, because radio is a completely different format. It's more something you make and then you let it sit and you see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a kid, like you raise it and then you let it wander off and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's not that immediate kind of sense of, you don't get an instant laugh after the joke.
Right.
You know,
right. Like this interview is not going to air for like 2 weeks.
Yes.
You know,
what do you mean? It's not airing today.
It is not it happening is on this Sunday. It's a different Sunday.
It's a time warp going on.
Yep.
That's the muscle I've been working. It's just is this a new medium? It's anytime you can learn something new, again, where you feel uncomfortable. Awesome. So much fun.
Yeah. Because one way or another, if you're in the right frame of mind about it, you will learn something. You'll be better off.
Yes.
You will. That's that weird dichotomy, is you will be better off afterward, even if the work you create is not better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not
even
so
if it's
much.
Not good.
Yeah. And that's not the point. It doesn't have to be good. It's just about like...
what you, as the artist, where you will be before and after an experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hopefully should be very different.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did that kind of, for you, the migration from like, you do web design and you're in a band to radio, how do you feel that you got to this point? And how do you feel that this point kind of trickles down into your other things?
It's a similar thing about doing something and letting it go. I've been the guy that will bury himself in the studio for months and months before I let anything go and perfecting. But with this, like with these interviews and a little bit of why I started taking the improv classes, I only took a few, and why I'm doing the show is like, we're hitting record and you know, if we go over 60 minutes, I'll trim it back to 60 and then I just got to give it to the station and they air it and that's it. I'm just like, at no point in any of my shows did I like stop tape and say, okay, let's do that again.
Yeah.
You know, there's no redoing. So it's my opportunity to learn about just doing it and letting it go. And that's been the most necessary, but also the toughest lesson that I'm still trying to beat into my head. Cause after, just so you know, I'm going home after this and I'm working on a song that I've been beating my head up over, for
just
a couple of months.
Your head right now.
It's been constantly, you know, I've got like the guitar tracks laid down and
I've been humming a lot. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it is. And I'm not even kidding. That's my afternoon is working on this tune, that I've been slaving over for way too long. And I'm realizing, you know what? I just need to like finish it up this afternoon. And anything I don't have done this afternoon, I just got to put it away for a little while.
Yeah.
And whether I successfully do that or not remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But that's the part of the journey that I'm on right now. Is I realized I was kind of comfortable. I was making myself pretty comfortable. Yeah. I was in the same band and was still in the band, but we've been in this band for, you know, 6-7 years, and I've just been kind of cruising along in that. And I was in like 6-8 months ago, I was like, I'd got to change it up a little bit. So I started, got involved with the radio show here, and I'm trying to get back involved with the improv scene over at the Vermont Comedy Club. Just again, just out of the comfort zone and making stuff and letting it go at the moment.
Yeah.
Cause it, you know, what's the old saying? Perfect is the enemy of the good, or you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where you spend so much time making something perfect that you've overshot, you know, you mm-hmm. overshoot good into, you know, what are you doing?
And I even go as far as say, like, perfect doesn't exist.
Oh, it doesn't.
It doesn't. And it's kind of a foolish thing to, understandably, people chase it, and you chase it in many ways, different parts of your life. But, like, once you realize that it's really kind of a useless race.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing to realize that things aren't perfect.
Again, that freedom. And it's very easy to talk about. It is easy to talk about.
Hard to do. Harder to...
Because we, you know, we keep that on one side. Yeah, you know, you're never going to get perfection. You're never going to do it. But then on the other side, you're like, I'm an artist. I have a vision. I have something that I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm driven to say that as clearly and as effectively as possible. And I want to respect and I want to serve that vision. But at the same time, you know...
Man, you just hit me with a big old chunk of mind.
Did I blow your mind?
You blew my mind.
All right.
Yeah. I'll try to find another way to not say my mind was blown.
How do you figure out what it is that you want to say and achieve that balance of saying it as effectively as possible without losing sight, without getting so into the weeds that you lose sight of what it is you're trying to say in the first place?
A couple of things. One, as far as a mental standpoint goes, I just have to be willing to trust myself to think. I have to be willing to go down whatever rabbit hole I mentally need to go down, and allow myself to just pursue any avenue I want to pursue and not be afraid if it's not good or not bad. Because when you put worry into the equation, you're kind of putting a filter onto your voice, which is the thing you want to share, and you want to be raw and true. And the moment you kind of put a little filter on it or like a siphon on it, it's not true and it's not pure and it's not original to yourself.
Yeah.
Another thing I do is I switch up. I just do different types of artwork, different muscles, you know, comedy, or I play guitar in my free time, not for a band or anything, but just to noodle around. Can kind of shift gears in your brain. You don't want to overwork one muscle because then, you know, you're going to pull something.
Yeah.
You know? You don't want to pull anything. And when you pull something, you still try. You're like, why isn't this arm working? It's like, because you've been doing curls for like 5 hours, man.
Yeah.
That's not healthy.
You're going to look like, you know, Popeye with, like, you know, these huge forearms, and everything else is just kind of...
Do you like my artwork? It's on my forearms. I got tattoos. So it's a messy process. And I think that is the thing to really focus on, is don't be afraid to get messy. Not only with your thoughts and the things you do in order to kind of make those thoughts take shape in an art form, but just be afraid to just bump around in the dark as much as you want. Like a bull in a china shop with the lights shut off. You know, just go crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
And how do you balance that with... And then... You just got to step back from it every once in a while. Yeah. Still.
You got to breathe.
Yeah.
And that's when I go to work. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's kind of a good thing about having those real world obligations, isn't
it?
You know, it's like I could spend all day in the basement, you know, working on this tune, but you've got to go to your job.
Yep.
You know,
and probably take a shower if you've been all day in the basement.
Well, once a week.
Once a week, you know.
Yeah. If need be.
Yeah.
Awesome. So now you're doing this Art Mache podcast. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that. How did you guys get into that? Why did you think that a podcast would be, like, what are you trying to accomplish with that?
Me and my friend Steve, we've known each other. We started working with each other at like a day job. Mm-hmm. We worked at a bakery in the South End. We just, from like day one, like I can't even remember what we said, but like we're in the first three sentences, I was just like, this guy has the same humor as I do. It was just kind of like one of those things, just like, we're going to be friends.
Yeah.
And then when I took improv, I became more aware of like how you can realize who you can work with really well in an improv scenario. Because you become aware of, in a collaborative setting, who you click with. And you become able to identify that pretty quickly. And so with him, it kind of, that's another way improv kind of came in. I'm like, I want to do something with this guy.
Yeah.
And he's a musician and he knows a lot about audio work. And I've kind of always thought radio would be fun. And we just sat down one day and like, let's do an episode. Let's do a podcast. And we just, the first one was just us talking about what we wanted to do. And then, which is, we want to explore, we want to take the Burlington art scene and kind of personify it through interviews with people who kind of define what the art scene is in different ways, and in different kind of subsets, illustrators, musicians, printmakers, all these things. I knew a lot of people in the comedy club. He knew a fair amount of musicians, and we just asked people if they wanted to be in front of a microphone. Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure, great. Yeah, and they were really excited about it. And that kind of pushed us along. And so all the guests we had were very excited, and they kept saying how there's nothing like this. Like, you guys, this is great. And we were just kind of like, oh, we're just doing this to screw around. But yeah. Then it kind of became something a little more, and it just kind of snowballed into just something we kind of both wanted, and in a way artistically I feel kind of needed to liven things up.
Yeah, there's it's not going to come as a surprise to anyone listening that there's a huge art scene, whether it's, you know, graphic arts or music or otherwise, here in Burlington, and it's easy for everyone's work to get lost in the and just the onslaught of just how much there is out there. Mm-hmm. So these shows, which is part of why I started this show, and it sounds like, you know, the reason that you started your podcast, which is, like you said, give voice, you know, let's talk about it. You know, there's, we want to make sure that we have an environment where we can go out and create and do, but every once in a while, yeah, step back from it and let's talk about it and let's examine what it is that's going on here. And it's also just another way of sharing, you know, of the exposure, getting the exposure to people, because not everyone's going to walk through an art gallery every day.
Exactly.
But everyone can be at their desk or in their car listening to something.
Yeah, it's always there, always ready to, it's waiting. You can download it. You can listen at any time. You know, it's, that's what lends itself so great with radio. That's the way I'd put it is we kind of want to, there's illustrators. What's the best way to put this? You're in a dark room, and there are these little groups with like a candle in the middle, of illustrators in one circle, potters in another circle, and they're all aware of each other in their own groups. We kind of want to use radio to kind of walk in the room, flick on the light and turn it on and be like, hey, you guys have been in the same room the whole time. Like, you're aware of other illustrators and you're aware of other comedians, but do you realize that there are all these other kind of cultures around you, and you all are together and you can all kind of collaborate? And we kind of want to foster that idea of how cool would it be if you had a comedian using illustrations as part of their set and they had an illustrator beyond there, or if a musician used somehow music in a digital art format to take their songs and present it in a different visual way. It's just, there's so much talent here.
Yeah.
And it's any way that it can go out to the masses in a different form and they can collaborate and create more and just be more aware of it is something that I have no problem spending time doing.
It goes back to that comment I made about the solitude, you know, the solitary nature of not just each individual artist, but also individual scenes, like say the folk music scene. They might be a bubble, right? And then there's the graphic arts. There's the potential for a bubble. And it's like, do you realize that there's all these other people within 5 miles, like literally on the bus line, right outside your house that you could be working with? That's great. I close each episode out talking about your favorite. All right, loosen the limbs.
I'm ready.
Loosen the limbs.
Oh, I'm ready.
Put the bingo card aside.
Done.
Okay, nothing here is going to be mind-blowing.
Okay, that's my puppy. Okay.
All right, there's your puppy. Put the puppy down. Okay. He just chewed your bingo card.
You know what? I already got the puppy, so it's okay. Okay.
Where we talk about your favorite things about Vermont, right? So we talk about how much, you know, how great this town is and how rich it is. But I want to hear more of a personal take on what it is that you're grateful that you love about Vermont so much. So I have four questions that I ask everybody. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with the first one. Who is your favorite Vermonter?
My dad, hands down.
Excellent. Yeah. Tell me about him.
There are multiple reasons why I love my dad and my mom as well, but he was a stay-at-home dad. I'm one of five. He grew up in Springfield, Vermont. And he's just an all-around good guy. At some point I want to like be a dad, and just looking back on my childhood, like that's the kind of dad I want to kind of get to.
What was it that he did that?
Just a lot of little things, a lot of little things. He's honest. He believes the best in everybody. He has a huge heart. And he's just a straight shooter. When you talk to him, he's not feeding you anything else besides 100% him. And he's just so caring and empathetic towards people. And it's helped me in my life. And I think anyone who knows him just knows how big of a heart he has. And it's hard not to like the guy, you know? Also, he's my dad.
Yeah, well, that helps. But yeah, those are some excellent traits that these days can feel like they're in far too short supply.
Mm-hmm.
So the more of that, the better. Mm-hmm. I fully support that. Your favorite Vermont place?
Oh, it's tough. There are a few Vermont places. One is, I love bodies of water, Lake Champlain. Awesome. But the causeway, you know that causeway that goes to Grand Isle? It's the bike path?
Yep.
Man, whenever there's not snow on the ground, that's my favorite place. It's one of the only places I think in Vermont where you know you're really close to town, but you feel half a world away.
Yeah.
There's just water on either side of you stretching out, and you're on the small little bit of land. You look either way, forward and backwards to you. All you can see is that little strip going either way. You feel like you're in the middle of the ocean.
You really do feel like you're middle of nowhere. Yeah. There have been a few times when the lake has frozen over,
mm-hmm.
and I've walked out, past the breakwater on the ice, and
the causeway?
No.
Like, what?
Whoa.
That's a trek.
No, but from like the downtown waterfront, mm-hmm. Just like walk out past the little lighthouse.
Oh,
and it's that same thing. It's a little creepy. I can't really bring myself to do it that often. And it's got to be like really cold for a long time. So you know that the ice is good. Mm-hmm. But there's that same kind of, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I know I'm just like
there,
a block away from town. But if I look this way, I mean, you can't even see the end of the lake. You just see the Adirondacks rising, from beyond the horizon. I love that feeling of being close but feeling really far away.
Yeah.
There's something special about that. Yeah. Tell me about your favorite Vermont memory.
Favorite Vermont memory, my dad. When I was probably five or six, I think, I woke up middle of the night. First thing I remember is my dad carrying me outside in my sleeping bag and putting me on a lawn chair in our backyard, and he's not saying a word during this whole time. I was like, what's going on? And he grabs my sister puts her in a lawn chair next to me, doesn't say a word, goes back in, comes back with two cups of hot chocolate, just gives this to us, and then he sits down and he's like, look up. And it was like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Like, no time a child should be up, or a parent would want a child to be up. And there's just a meteor shower, and I remember it was just silence, and we're all just watching the meteor shower, and that is like the best dad move ever. It's like totally
awesome.
Like dad points. It's just like whenever I think about my dad, like that's the first thing I think of. It's knowing the moment as it's there and capitalizing on it in a way that you can share it with others. And that totally just wraps him up perfectly. Like that's him.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How do you think your upbringing, your dad and your mom influenced or had an effect on the artwork that you do?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it has. My dad's a goofball. My mom's a goofball. I mean, we're all goofballs.
That's a good answer. there's no doubt there's plenty of humor to your work.
Oh, yeah. So I feel like that's kind of allowed me to feel very free and being like a weird, goofy guy. Yeah. And that just bleeds into everything I do.
That's one of the best things. I had that fortune myself from growing up, is that, my parents didn't always understand me, but they always let me.
Yeah.
Wherever I was going, They said, well, you're a little weird, Adam, but here's a little Casio keyboard. We'll buy you. And, you know, explore this weird avenue that you want to go down. And we're not going to get in the way. And it sounds like that's what, you know, you kind of had is just saying, just a parent to say, it's okay. I get it. I mean, I don't get it. But, you know.
My mom would always, I'd always try to make jokes when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And my mom would just be like, he's not funny, John. And my dad's like, no, he's funny. He's just got to work on his timing. And then that clicked in my early 20s. I started doing comedy.
Right. You got good material. You just got to work on the delivery. Down.
Yeah, he's just like, he's got something. But he just needs to finish it well, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's just like a real dad, timing. You know? That's like you're a perfect, that's also a pretty perfect dad moment. It's like the compliment and the criticism as like hand in hand. It's like, you got something eventually.
Yeah. Work on it.
Which is another thing that a parent should do is kind of push you along, but also kind of prevent you from going off the rails.
Yep. They're both very good at that.
All right. Final question. Favorite Vermont food or drink?
Oh my God. Henry's Diner. Henry's Diner.
Well, what dish? What dish? Well, not
they have skillets, and mine is the Vermonter, which is hash browns, eggs, potatoes, toast. Always get them over easy so that the yolk kind of runs in and mixes in with it. And also got some good old Cabot cheese, checking off that super local ingredient box, even though it's also New York. But, gosh, you know, and I don't drink coffee because I just my metabolism is so fast, I go straight to the crash. Oh. But like, oh yeah, coffee sucks for me. But that's okay. I don't drink it that much. Yeah. But man, the other day, like a week ago, for the first time in like a year, I found myself having time. And I'm like, oh, hey, there's Henry's. And no one's in there.
Hmm.
Like, yes. Ate a whole skillet all to myself.
Nice.
So good. Oh.
Oh, man.
Please.
Well, tell me, how can people find you and your work online?
My website is brunotracy.com. I'm Bruno Tracy Art on all the Instagram, Twitters, Facebook. I have a Tumblr, but don't look at it because I have one entry. I'm still learning it.
Are people even still looking at Tumblrs?
I don't know, but I got one.
Yep.
So if you're a Tumblr, press pause on that one.
Yeah.
Get ready.
And your podcast.
Yeah, Art Mache Podcast. You can find that at artmachepodcast.com. There's also we use like exclusive things for our Instagram for videos, for extra stuff. But yeah, I got a lot more stuff coming along the way. So stay tuned.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank my guest today, Patrick Bruno Tracy.
Thank you.
For coming on to the show. And you can hear more podcasts. I'm just going to let it run.
Look at the dog. Dog's staring at you.
The dog's staring. I'm just going to run.
Just go.
All right. Thank you for chatting today. You can hear more episodes of Vermont Favorites or subscribe to the podcast at imadeitup.com. And you can listen to more radio shows and podcasts at 993wbtv.org. Information on upcoming guests is available at the Vermont Favorites Facebook page. Vermont Favorites is a production of WBTV LP 99.3 Burlington. I'm Adam Rabin. Thank you for listening. Take care.